I didn't like subprime financing because of the increased risk attached to it, he said the magic words that I will never forget. Matt, you are a smart guy with a good business, but never forget something. My definition of risk and your definition of risk are two very different things. His statement stopped me in my tracks. He was right. His superior understanding of the industry actually made subprime financing attractive to him. He had run a publicly traded subprime auto finance company and retired at the age of 44 when he cashed in his stock for just shy of $1 billion. His view of that type of business, through his experience and his research and analysis, allowed him to view the subprime financing business in some ways as less risky than the prime financing business. In short, his view of risk was so different from mine. He used it to become a billionaire, and I didn't. That meeting opened my eyes. I took his advice and started deep research and analysis into the subprime equipment financing space. After a few months of reading, asking questions, and reviewing actual data, I formed a new company called Fresh Start Equipment Financing, Inc. Fresh Start, owned 100% by me, now offers subprime financing for businesses wanting to buy transportation equipment. I mean, you didn't think I would just take a billionaire's suggestion and not do my research and analysis, did you? Of course not. His words forced me to work harder and to do more research and analysis into my business and into the subprime financing industry. So now I'm in both the prime financing and the subprime financing of the transportation equipment business, and I think Fresh Start, my subprime business, alone will do $50 million in the next few years. Force yourself to do the research and analysis phase until you have so much data that your perception of risk is fully tested. After that phase is done, you might come up with the same conclusion regarding risk. But in some cases, you might change your understanding of the risk and then pull the trigger on a new venture or investment or career. You should ask yourself before pulling the trigger, if I am wrong about this, what is the worst that can happen? Am I financially in a position to handle that outcome? Understanding the consequences is part of your research and analysis and will help you determine your choice. But when assessing the risk, you have to factor in not just what you could stand to lose by taking a chance, but also what you might miss out on if you don't. We all have that uncle who wishes he bought that corner lot 20 years ago. He says every time he drives by it, if I'd only bought that lot, think of what it would be worth today. I have been that uncle way too many times, and my financial wealth has suffered from it. I knew that all the kids were crazy about Under Armour clothes when the stock was $23 a share. It has since gone as high as $120. But I didn't act on it. I was uncertain. Would Nike come in and kill Under Armour? Would it be a fad? Did I ask anyone? Nope. Did I call anyone? Nope. Did I ask any of my friends in Baltimore if they had any opinions or information about the Baltimore-based company? Nope. I just watched the stock go to $120, and then I said, well, I missed that one again. How do you determine your own risk tolerance? Ask yourself, are you willing or interested in doing the research? Once you've done that research and analysis, are you still feeling uncertain or concerned? Then you're probably not willing to tolerate the risk. Or are you feeling confident because you know exactly what to do? Bingo. By continuing to do the research, continuing to dig, you'll eventually determine whether or not you can tolerate the risk. You must understand whether you are the captain or the passenger. Not everyone needs to be the lead developer on a new apartment complex. Sometimes you can simply be a passive investor. Just put up your money and let it ride on the backs of others. Just make sure you do your research and analysis here too. You want to be sure that you're working with credible experts who are trustworthy and have solid credentials and a winning track record. That's how I like to play the real estate game. I leave it to the experts to do their development thing, their zoning thing, their construction cycle thing, their marketing and rental thing, and I just put up my money and collect a check each month. It's good enough for me to be the passenger on that deal because I'm the captain in my business. I don't need to be the captain of all of my investments, and neither do you. But in either case, you must do the research and analysis required to provide an answer that connects to your risk tolerance. Take a step back to take two steps forward. The legendary speaker Jim Rohn once said, "You can't see the picture when you're inside the frame." Sometimes you might be so wrapped up in your current money situation that you can't see the whole picture. You might need to take a step back to see all the possibilities for your life. Taking one step back in order to take two steps forward is something not many people would do in order to be able to lead the life they want to live. But as we've established, that is not you. You want to live your lifestyle by design, and you are willing to do anything to get it, right? Well, you might need to make a move backwards so you can leap into a bigger, more profitable future. Take, for example, the bartender who makes $300 a night at a hotspot in New York City. That's good money to them and could be hard to give up. And that's why you see so many people who start in the restaurant or strip club business and can't leave it. They get used to the short-term money, and they can't make the sacrifice of taking a step back to make giant leaps forward in their future. That bartender might really want to be a dentist or a doctor or plastic surgeon, but because she's making such good money as a bartender, she's not willing to take a step backwards and take a pay cut to go back to school and pursue her dreams. When you're sitting on a little money, you might be more willing to take that step back because you can supplement your lower income with your savings. Once again, it allows you the freedom to have a choice. It also raises your risk tolerance. It's a less risky move if you have more money to fall back on. In the next chapter, I'll tell you about setting up a reserve account, which you'll find to be crucial in giving you the ability to take a step back to return to school or to start a business or to just explore your options and find a better path forward. I've seen this firsthand at my own company. 3 years ago, Sean interviewed with us for a sales position. He had been working as a finance manager at various car dealerships in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and his income was decent at $120,000 annually. Sean had earned this income for a number of years and was considered excellent in his field. Then Sean and his wife had a little girl. When you go from single to married or from married to parents, it creates an overnight wake-up call. Sean knew that if he stayed in the car business, he would miss most Saturday soccer games, not to mention school plays and field trips. In the car business, you often work bell to bell, as they say, and as anyone in that industry will tell you, your family life is for the birds. Sean couldn't do that anymore. His core values had changed, and they now included being able to spend time with his family, not just support them financially. And to protect this core value, Sean applied the doorman principle to make sure nothing got in the way of that. Sean found us online because of how much content we put out on social media outlets and proceeded to do a ton of research about us. He asked friends if they knew about us, and this led him to speak to both current and former employees. When he interviewed with me, his mind was made up that he was going to work at CFF and watch his baby girl grow up. His research and analysis removed any fear of risk, and he knew CFF was the right platform. There was only one problem. At that time, our compensation plan for a new salesperson from outside our industry was $500 per week plus commission. That was going to be a major short-term pay cut for Sean and his wife and his new baby. But he was willing to take a step backward to take two steps forward because it meant he could spend the time he wanted to with his family, as well as eventually make enough money to continue to live his lifestyle by design, the one that would lead him back to that $120,000 a year and then some. He knew there would be long-term gains if he took the short-term loss. In Sean's case, it paid off handsomely for him. In fact, he didn't take two steps forward. He took more like three or four. In his first year after busting his butt, working plenty of late nights and weekends to skill up, Sean made every milestone event planned for his little baby girl and had replaced his income from his previous career. In year two, Sean had doubled his income and never missed an event with his family. In year three, he tripled it. And in year four, he looks to hit a mid-six-figure annual income. The money part of this story is awesome. And if you are willing to step back to determine a better course for yourself and put in the same amount of work as Sean in the right platform, it can happen for you too. But the greatest part of this story for me is not the money. It's that his daughter knows her daddy. Money can't buy that relationship. You might be making very good money working for another company and are not willing to take a 50% pay cut to go into business for yourself or make a career change. You might have to move from the cool department in your company to take over the lead in the train wreck department. But that's how you get your chance. Your break. Sometimes you have to eat a little crow, as they say, to be able to leap past everyone in the future. Fork in the road, employee or employer. Once you've found a way to take a step back, you now have to make some decisions about how you plan to move forward. Everything we've talked about until now applies to you regardless of whether you're employed by a business or own or are thinking about owning your own business. We are now going to explore if you should work for someone else or if you should work for yourself. But how do you know if you should be an employee or an employer? Thank you for asking. We've arrived at the employee or employer fork in the road to determine which path you're going to take to make more money, and it's time to pick one. Your choices are simple. A, stay at your job and find a way to get paid more. B, stay at your job and make additional money on the side. Or C, become your own boss. Whichever path you're meant to follow, I will show you how to make more money in the following chapters. But it's time to make a decision. Let's do some critical, essential research and analysis. Can you get the money you need through the job you currently have, or do you need some sort of side or extra income? Do you need to create what I call your own personal ATM? You must do the research and analysis, and the path will become clear. Here's how you figure it out. Number one, does your current industry offer you opportunities to earn what you need? Number two, assess value points. What can you bring to the organization based on your skill set? Number three, is anyone within your industry currently earning what you need? You need real examples here, not promises. Number four, are you currently bringing exceptional, not middle of the road, value to your organization? Number five, do you have the money to make a change if you can't get what you need? Number six, if you don't have any money to leave and go into business for yourself, do you have a network of people with money to get an idea off the ground? Number seven, what options do you have? Money always follows the deal. If you have a good deal in business, an idea, investment, whatever, you will find the money for it. Number eight, do you have the skills built up yet? Number nine, have you done the research and analysis required to make a change? A mechanic might want to become a pharmaceutical rep, but have they done the research, analysis, and skilling up to make the change? And number 10, are you really a business owner? Or should you just skill up, bring massive value to the organization, and rise up the ranks? Trust me, The number 2 through 10 employees at Facebook are doing just fine. Sometimes it's better to be the vice president of a large organization instead of the CEO of a poor small business. Once you have the answers to these questions, it should be clear which way you should go. But here are the questions you should be asking yourself. Can you make the money you need in a regular job if you deliver more value? If your regular job won't cut it, do you have a business idea and have you done your research to get it off the ground? Everyone is now in control of their destiny. The employee now has more power over the employer than ever before. It wasn't always like that. The employee is not beholden to the employer anymore. Employees these days have the ability to leave because there are a lot more choices. And one of those choices is to do your own gig. If you don't want to work for anyone but yourself, you can make that happen. According to a December 2016 article in Forbes, the richest star on YouTube is PewDiePie. He has more subscribers to his YouTube channel than anyone else. He's ranked number 1 with over 54 million subscribers as of this writing, and his subscriber count continues to grow at over 10,000 per day. He has over 15 billion views and consistently gets 5 million views per day. PewDiePie is in charge of it all. He has power with YouTube. He has power with his audience. He has power with brands and therefore clients who want access to him. He has power over his money. He earned well over $15 million in 2016. And most important, Felix Kjellberg, aka PewDiePie, has power over his own life because he is leading it by his design. You don't have to work for a manufacturing company until you die. You have a choice. Or if you like having the benefits, stability, and salary that come with being an employee, that's great too. But you don't have to wait to be handed opportunities anymore. You can make them. And employees that don't understand that concept are the unhappy ones. Word of caution. Being your own boss is overrated. The trap that so many people fall into is the one where they believe that being in business for themselves is a greater opportunity than being an employee. I'm here to say that in the vast majority of situations, that is simply not true. 50% of all businesses fail in the first year. 90% of all businesses fail in the first 5 years. That means it's often a bad bet to go into business for yourself. I know firsthand the difficulties of running a company. At my company in 2015 and 2016, we torched it. What do I mean by torching it? We decided to completely overhaul the business and reconnect to our company culture, our mission statement, and our core values. And we rebuilt our management team. During this torching process, we said goodbye to a number of employees. They simply didn't like the new company culture that I was determined to implement. They didn't like that we hired a new vice president of sales and a new vice president of operations and a new vice president of finance and that they had to report to them directly. And they absolutely hated the fact that I put in place an employment agreement that made it very clear that although they could go into business for themselves and even compete against us in the marketplace, they could not take our clients, dealers, or vendors with them. When I launched the employment contract to the group, I gave everyone plenty of time to review it with their family, friends, and attorneys. But one day, before the signing deadline, an employee who had been with me for 12 years earned $567,000 in personal annual income at that time and had consistently been one of my top 5 salespeople came into my office and said, "You know that I'm not going to sign that employment agreement." And I said, "That's going to be a problem." He went on to tell me that he'd been with me for 12 years and that we could work out some sort of an arrangement in which he didn't have to sign it but could still keep his job. I told him that there would be no side deals and he had until noon the following day to sign the agreement. The following morning, he came into my office and once again said that he wasn't going to sign the agreement, and this time also said that he was going to go out on his own and start his own equipment finance company. I wished him the best and handed him a box. He packed his desk, and just like that, after 12 years, he left his almost $570,000 a year job to go into business for himself. By the end of our torch, three additional competing equipment finance companies were created by former employees of my company. It was the worst decision he could have possibly made. The idea that he would replace the $567,000 personal income as a one-man band without an IT department, a marketing department, a finance department, an operations department, or a meaningful brand in the marketplace was ludicrous. He's now working out of his home office, scouring the marketplace for low-level leads with financing options that pale in comparison to the financing options and support that he had when he was employed with us. I'm not angry or bitter about it. I didn't sue him. I didn't go after him. In fact, if there's any way that I can actually help him be successful, I will. But best case scenario? He'll probably make 50% of the income that he would have working for me, and he will have to do 100% of all of the support necessary to be successful. He will have to be the marketing department, the IT department, the operations department, and the finance department. It's a perfect example of why most people will make more money being an exceptional employee rather than being a one-person employer. So if you're leaving a steady job to go into business for yourself, your first question has to be, how can I replace my income working for myself instead of working for someone else? You simply have to do the math and some research and some analysis. How many deals will you have to do? How much revenue will you have to generate? What will be your cost of goods sold? What will be the cost of your payroll expenses? What about your marketing expenses? What will be the cost of the capital equipment? Debt service? Can you get the funding? Can you be competitive in the marketplace versus working for someone else? How long will it be before you can pay yourself a salary? Once you do the math, your decision will become very clear to you. Does the bottom line number of being in business for yourself match the number you would have made as an employee? Notice that I haven't even talked about health benefits or 401k programs or employer matching programs or company cars or travel to unique places or any of those things that most employers cover that will now fall onto your shoulders. So, do yourself a favor before you walk out of your current job. Before you let yourself go down the rabbit hole of how much you hate working for someone else, or how much you hate your boss, or how much freedom you'll think you'll gain by working for yourself, do the math. Will going into business for yourself replace the personal income you make working for someone else? Still don't believe me? Let me lay out a couple of examples for you. In my 22 years in business, I have lost many salespeople who wanted to leave my company and start their own equipment finance business. But none have duplicated the success they had while employed by my company. Why? Because they fell into the trap that so many others fall into. They thought their success was based on them. In reality, as an employee, you must base your success on a lot of factors. When your sole responsibility is to sell a product or provide a service, you can be hugely successful by focusing on that one thing. But when you go out on your own, you are now in charge of accounting, marketing, shipping, human resources, and contracting. You are no longer just selling. Therefore, your time is now pulled in many directions. You can't focus on just selling, and your sales drop. I have seen it so many times. The number one salesperson thinks he can do it better than the company he works for, so he leaves and starts his own business, only to fall flat on his face. In order to win at the game of business, you must be good. No, great at all aspects of business. Consider, for example, a barista at Starbucks who constantly dreams about what her own coffee shop would look like and how different she would make it from Starbucks. How the organic coffee she'd serve in French presses would be sourced only from nonprofit coffee bean growers in Costa Rica, and how many customers she'd attract. She gets caught up in that dream instead of the reality of the $10,000 monthly rent for their corner storefront, or simply the fact that people like the consistency and branding of Starbucks. That brand has been created through hundreds of millions of dollars worth of marketing and advertising and 30 years of corporate growth. So just because you're a great barista doesn't mean you can be a competitor to Starbucks. Why is it so much harder to start a small business than to work for someone else? Most people think that clients choose to do business with the salesperson that they work with, and that's simply not true. You may convince some clients to leave with you because of that relationship, but at the end of the day, clients want to do business with the best overall solution for them, not with you. Think about it. When you purchase something on Amazon, you're not doing business with Jeff Bezos, Amazon's founder and CEO. You don't care that he's the richest man in the world, or the fact that he wears a blue shirt to work every day. You want to know when Amazon is going to get your purchase to you and if you got the best possible price. When you buy something at Walmart, you don't care about Sam Walton. You don't care that he drove a beat-up pickup truck forever or even care why he founded Walmart. You shop at Walmart because it's dirt cheap. Now, maybe you don't have to get into a capital-intensive business. Maybe you're in a solopreneur field as a web designer, a videographer, or some sort of consultant. But once again, can you play to your superpower and still deliver the same overall solution to your customer? If you can do that, and if the math checks out, you should go into business for yourself. I repeat, if you have done the research and analysis, and you like the risk and the results, you should go into business for yourself. Action steps. Take the litmus test. Calculate your expenses. You need to get real about where you are and how far you need to go. Figure out exactly how much you need to live your lifestyle by design. Decide if you're on the right platform. Who are the highest earners in the industry? Are there many high earners in the industry or just a handful? Do you have the right skills to advance in the industry? Find some rich friends. You've got to make sure to surround yourself with people who have already gotten to where you want to go so you can learn from them. Ask them about platforms that they think are good for you to consider. Your mission is to research everything from now on. If you're making a switch or a big investment, have you done all the research possible to ensure that your risk is as small as possible? What other questions can you ask that you haven't already asked? Do you have a buffer of money to protect you in a worst-case outcome? By asking questions and doing research, you can always zero in on your risk tolerance in every situation. Employee or employer? There are pros and cons to both sides. Understand the risks involved in leaving a steady job to become a stable entrepreneur. You may be good at your current job, but that doesn't necessarily translate into being good at running a business. Chapter 5, step number 2, get out of broke and into accumulation mode. Wealth accumulation, which phase are you in? In my view, there are only three zones of wealth that most people reach: broke, accumulation, or rich. I will briefly discuss a fourth zone called wealthy, but I won't spend much time on it. That's for a different book. First, we have to define where you are. Which of these categories do you currently fall into? Broke. You don't have enough money to pay the bills. You have to go to work whether you want to or not to cover your bills. In real life terms, you probably couldn't go more than a few weeks without a paycheck before your world would shut down. Accumulation. You have some money saved up. You can take the pressure of making ends meet each week out of the equation. You are not broke anymore, but you are far from rich. But you are working the program, and if you stick with it, you are well on your way to rich. And rich. You no longer have to go to work to collect a check and live the life you want. Only when you get to rich can you fully realize your vision of a lifestyle by design. When my friend Grant Cardone recently interviewed me for his show Power Players, I laid out my framework for the three stages of wealth. When I explained the stages of broke, accumulation, and rich, Grant said, "You missed one. You missed wealthy." Wealthy. Unshakable generational wealth, like that of the Carnegies, Rockefellers, and Vanderbilts. To Cardone, wealthy is indestructible wealth. He wanted to skip over rich altogether and go straight from accumulation to wealthy. Warren Buffett money, Bill Gates money, Rockefeller money. Wealthy is having the kind of money that even if Wall Street melted, or we were hit by war or natural disaster, your legacy would never be destroyed. I can't talk to you about wealthy because I'm not there myself, and this audio program may not be for people looking to get there. I know only a few people who would meet the criteria of wealthy. But to hear many of them talk about how they operate, it's as if they are still in accumulation. They want more and can never let go of their game facer mindset. Warren Buffett, for example, still makes incredibly lucrative deals. Meanwhile, the people I know who think they have made it are the ones who have not made it and maybe never will. The richest people I know want more. They want more money. Some want more money just for their scoreboard, and others want it to help their charities. I believe it is because they aren't done building their lifestyle by design. They have the freedom to stop whenever they want, but they choose not to. It is insanely hard to get to wealthy, and you and I might never get there, but nothing should stop you from getting to rich. By my own definition, I'm rich. I'm able to spend time with my children and travel with my wife whenever I want. I have enough monthly income to be able to decide how much I want to work and what I want to work on. Despite that, I keep myself in accumulation mode. It keeps me hungry for more. I'm not done. I still go to work every day. I still bust my ass. I work hard on growing my company, writing, speaking, coaching, and I enjoy all of it. Once you realize the power of accumulation mode, it makes you dream bigger and shoot for more ambitious goals. That's why rich is a tough step to get into, because you have to set the standards for yourself. Most people who listen to this audio program will be in either the broke or the accumulation category. And as I've said earlier, jumping from broke to accumulation is relatively simple. It's much harder to transition from accumulation to rich. When you create the standards for yourself of what rich is, you must stick to those standards. Don't let anyone else tell you to lower them. If the needle moves, it should only go higher. Your target net worth should never go down, only up. For game facers, this is the fuel that drives us. The competition of moving up the financial food chain is the game that we play daily. Get out of broke. Yes, being busted broke happens far more than we think. 69% of Americans have less than $1,000 in their savings accounts, and 35% have zero. But don't take comfort if you're doing better than that. Because the way I see it, you're still broke if you have very little freedom, if any, and you're enslaved to your job because you needed to pay the bills each week or month. I will go so far as to say that if you don't have a minimum of $50,000 liquid cash saved up, that you too are busted broke. The average small business owner in America today makes less than a family of four. the average family of four makes $51,000 a year. Remember, this audio program is about money. Most of us would consider that broke. It makes no difference if you are self-employed or work for someone else. Either way, you could be in my broke zone. But don't fret, because getting out of broke is truly the easiest transition between the three phases of wealth. It's literally the easiest financial situation to change because you don't have to go that far up the food chain to get out of it. But there's another important factor about understanding how to get out of broke. Most people who are broke actually do survive. They actually have a roof over their heads. They have heat and they have running water. They aren't in despair. Therefore, if they can survive on broke, and if we can figure out how to get them 20 to 50% more income, they will quickly move out of broke and into accumulation. Here are my six quick steps to get you out of broke and into accumulation mode. Number one, admit that you are broke. If you don't have $50,000 saved in the bank, after subtracting any debt you owe, you have to admit that you are broke. You need to look in the mirror and admit that you really don't have any money. And because of this, you don't have any freedom. Maybe you lost your money. Maybe you spent it. Maybe your ex-whatever took it. Or maybe you just haven't put yourself in a position to earn more. Whatever your reason, it's time to get past it because you bought this audio program and you want to change. Be honest with yourself. Cut out the BS you've been telling yourself and others. Until you have the amount of money I suggest above as liquid cash in the bank, you are in broke. Number two, cut spending completely. I'm not talking about your survival needs. Please continue to pay your rent or your mortgage, the utility bills, and the household bills such as transportation, clothes, and basic groceries. But the gourmet cookies you think you deserve or the new pair of shoes, bye-bye. Notice that I didn't say to cut your spending by a certain percentage. I said cut your spending completely. Anything over your bare living expenses of food, shelter, clothes, and transportation must be cut to zero. Don't go easy on yourself here. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. Cut it to zero and don't look back. It will be a short-term sacrifice that will provide you tremendous long-term gains. Number three, no credit card usage. Cut them up. Credit cards are one of the biggest reasons why people can't get out of broke. Why? Because credit cards are not tools to protect you against emergencies. They are tools to allow you to splurge. They burn a hole in your wallet and in your financial freedom. Cut the dirty little bastards up and do it now. Do not keep just one. Stop listening to this audio program, pull them out of your wallet, and cut them up. Number four, sell stuff. Once again, anything over the bare necessities must go. I know this sounds extreme, but it's because it is. Get rid of it all. A garage sale, eBay, or Craigslist should be used to unload the purse, the bike, unless it's your transportation, the extra furniture, the extra computers, the cameras, and the like. It all must go in order to generate some much-needed cash and momentum. Number five, save $50,000. Yes, $50,000. I know it might sound like a pipe dream. You might be thinking, this Matt guy is nuts. I can't pay the bills and he thinks I'm going to save up 50 grand. I understand why you would think that, but this audio program is the wake-up call you needed. I'm not going to give you the easy way out, but by the time you finish this audio program, it'll be a lot easier than you think. I'm going to tell you the truth. The actual steps that I took to go from zero to seven figures in my savings accounts. Until you have $50,000 of liquid cash sitting in your bank account, you aren't out of broke. In fact, many of the richest people I've interviewed say my number is stupid. ridiculously low and not even close were some of the comments I heard when I asked them if 50,000 was a fair number. But they have already made it to rich and you haven't. Use my number of $50,000 as the goal to no longer considering yourself and broke. But once again, don't get all proud of yourself once you hit this number. All you did was just get out of broke. The goal of this journey you and I are on is to get us to rich. And I don't care how you slice it, while having $50,000 saved up after you started from zero might feel really good, in reality, you are just not broke anymore. I get that you might be thinking that even $50,000 saved up in liquid cash may not be the ideal number for your situation. In fact, $50,000 might only be enough to cover your bills for a few months. I don't think that matters. What matters is that you have this amount in liquid cash. It's a new level of power for you, and I promise you it will give you the confidence that you can get to the next level. Number 6, start earning more. Ultimately, you don't have an expenses problem. You have a revenue problem. While you do need to cut your expenses right now to start getting out of broke, earning more income should be your focus over the long term rather than lowering your expenses. Earning more is your ticket to getting out of broke, into accumulation, and eventually to rich. As you start earning more, it is essential that you don't start ramping up your expenses as well. All your additional revenue should go into your reserve account, which I'll say more about in a moment. I will talk a lot more about how we are going to make earning more really happen for you later in this chapter, but if you want to get out of broke, you will need more money now. Pick up extra hours at work, or get a second job waiting tables or tending bar. If you are already a solid earner, then become a top earner by bringing more value and more revenue. Do whatever you need to do, but start the process of earning more now, so that when I show you how to earn tens of thousands more, it will make more sense to you. Remember, getting out of broke is the easiest phase. A broke mindset is the path to wealth. Even when you get out of broke, you need to stay broke in your financial mind. Remember, you need more money. This is your new mantra. As soon as you get out of broke, you'll start to get comfortable, and getting comfortable is disastrous to getting rich. Comfortable is when you start to find ways to spend your money instead of to save and invest it. Comfortable kills ambition, and ambition is one of my keys to making more money. Comfortable happens when your spouse tries to convince you that you can afford the nicer house or the second car, or you stop producing more value that you can leverage for more money. I'm all for celebrating, but most of us take it to extreme levels that are often not in line with our money situation. The little costs now cost us big over time. Game facers understand this concept, and now so do you. Complacency is the death of wealth accumulation. When you get out of broke, you might start to believe that you are now rich, but you're not rich. You're just not broke anymore. Big difference. However, when the pressure of being broke is no longer staring us in the face every day, we back off the throttle and most of us will start to figure out ways to celebrate. What are you celebrating? That you can now answer your cell phone in public because you don't have collectors calling you anymore? Yeah, I said it. How would I know the feeling of not being able to answer my cell phone in public for fear that everyone around me would know that it was a collector? Because I lived that life in the past too. Very few people in this world are in rich and can afford to be complacent. What you are in now is accumulation mode. Accumulation mode starts when your bills no longer come on pink slips and you have a minimum of $50,000 liquid cash saved up. But you still need to be stacking and racking cash to get you to your real financial goals. But most of us at this stage slip into complacency. We simply stop staying laser focused on making more money. People treat money and their effort to have it like a thermostat in their house. Picture the thermostat on your wall. When the temperature gets too cold, oh shit, I'm broke and we'll get evicted, you go to the thermostat and turn the heat up. That means you start getting up early, working out again, eating healthy, dressing for success, staying late, grabbing some overtime, following up with more customers, working every lead, and reducing spending. You start to make smarter choices, make more money, and pull yourself out of the hole you dug for yourself. Then what happens? You go back to the thermostat and you turn the air conditioning on to cool things down a bit. You have kept the creditors at bay for another few months because of your increased efforts and reduction in spending, and then bask in the cool air. You stop pushing yourself, start spending time and money on things that you used to say no to, and quickly watch your results fall again. Before you know it, you're back on the verge of broke again, and the cycle repeats itself over and over. Congratulations, you've reached complacency, and you've tricked your brain into thinking that you are actually doing well. For some of us, the people who develop a game-facer mindset, we figure out the pace at which we are able to work to keep the range of the thermostat steady and at a higher temperature. We have actually created a financial existence in which we never let it get too cold. Game facers can handle the heat. I challenge you to increase your heat tolerance and increase your range. When down the road you get closer to rich, you will be operating at an even higher thermostat for a few years, and then you will be able to set your thermostat at whatever the hell you want. The moment you get out of broke, you've entered accumulation. That means continuing to behave as if you are broke while funneling every additional dollar towards your long-term goal of living your lifestyle by design. Accumulation mode. Congratulations. You've earned your ticket out of broke and into the accumulation phase of real wealth building. You are one step closer to becoming a full-fledged game facer. Now we can get started on stacking and racking real cash, accumulating money in accounts so that when the opportunity comes to make real investments, you can. Give yourself a pat on the back. Celebrate with a long but inexpensive weekend with your significant other, then get back to work. You now need to build on that $50,000 and turn it into millions. Because as I have said before and will say again, the money has moved and you need more money. Let me warn you now, your grit, your ability to stay the course will be tested. Accumulation is the most difficult phase to get out of. It is hard to leave accumulation and move into rich. Anyone can get out of broke, but getting out of accumulation is a whole other ball game. It's hard because you will face pressure from your family, friends, colleagues, enemies, neighbors, and your own desire to get comfortable and start spending more. If your own grit to keep at it is eluding you, it could be because you spend too much time looking to reward yourself rather than spending that time developing a strong competitive drive. Let your unbridled ambition kick in here. Every time you feel the urge to celebrate, close your eyes and spend 10 minutes visualizing your lifestyle by design and think about how far you are from achieving it. Think about how much progress you can make towards your lifestyle by design by postponing your celebration. Develop a gritty discipline within yourself to work and spend like you are still broke. Game facers have the grit to postpone celebrations and rewards in their business and personal life. Until you reach the time when it's smart for you to indulge, do everything in your power to never be worthy of the ultimate insult said about blamers and dreamers in the great state of Texas. He's all hat and no cattle. In the town I live in, I saw house after house get built, completed, and sold. The people who bought them took on major mortgages to make it happen. I guarantee you, most of them made small down payments and took 30-year mortgages. According to some of my realtor friends, many of these homes have not and will not be furnished because the owners don't have the money to do so. I wasn't going to let myself fall into a similar trap. Let the Joneses keep up with the Joneses has always been my philosophy. We Moneros were going to build when we were ready to build. Because I put off buying a house for years, I now have the nicest one in my neighborhood with a fraction of the mortgage. Celebrating smart and rarely can and will save you a ton of cash in the long run. Here are the most common habits and comments I hear from people in accumulation that don't have the grit to stay on the path. I'm good. No, you're not good. What does that mean anyway? You are good based on what? That you can afford to take a nice vacation? That you can go to a nice restaurant? You have a 401k or a Roth IRA? You have a couple hundred thousand in the bank? None of these facts put you in the I'm good category. You are good when you reach rich, and you are rich when you are living exactly the life you have always dreamed of without a care in the world. Until that time, you are either in broke or in accumulation, but you are not good. I'm doing better than my parents. Your parents didn't do that well. In fact, they didn't do well. They did poorly. Unless your parents were rich, by my definition, and they lived their life on their terms, by their design with no financial worries, they don't deserve your comparison. You don't need to resent them, but let's not use their results as a barometer to compare your results to. If you are going to compare yourself to someone, find someone who has actually created the life you want to live and compare yourself to them. I still have time. Time is not a given. My brother-in-law John used to tell me this constantly. He would tell himself that he had time to make up the gap, but time caught up to him. The sooner you start, the more easily you'll get there. In our journey to get rich, we are racing against time. Time is a factor to accumulation and getting to rich, but it is not something to be toyed with. When you say that you still have time, you are lying to yourself. Get after it now and stop believing that time doesn't eventually expire. It always does, and you have no control over when. When you are in accumulation, you need to stack and rack cash, lots and lots of it, so that you can eventually make financial moves that propel you closer to rich. Let me set the stage for how confusing the difference between accumulation and broke can be. It was years ago, but I remember it like it was yesterday. I'm in my closet at my house getting dressed to go to dinner with my wife and another couple, friends of ours. Once again, they wanted to go to a fancy steakhouse in Dallas, Texas, Bob's Chop House. We've done this exercise multiple times. It really should be a nice double date between me and my wife and our friends. But for me, it's a nightmare. God forbid I tell my wife and my friends that we don't have the money to go to Bob's. As I'm getting dressed in my closet, I pull out my credit card and literally call the number on the back of the card to check how much money I had available. Answer, $500. I have virtually no cash in the bank and $500 available on my credit card, and I'm going to an expensive restaurant. Absurd, right? And the thing is, you know that you've done the exact same thing, saying yes when you know you should have said no. We get in the car, go to Bob's, and we see our friends in the lobby. We're hugging. Everyone's in a good mood. The maitre d' sits us down at our table of four, and I cringe inside as I hear my friend say, "Let's order wine." In my head, I'm thinking, please don't order an expensive bottle. Then the wives say, "Let's order appetizers all around, and we'll split them." So now we got our wine and our appetizers. The waiter comes and announces specials for the evening. There's Chilean sea bass and 28-ounce T-bone steak, all priced at $40 to $50 each. The fun of the evening for me has now completely evaporated. I can't even enjoy myself because I'm pissed that I don't have a pot to piss in and I'm acting like I do. I'm stuck and I'm lying to myself and everyone around me about it. I just can't bring myself to tell the truth and stop the madness. I'm terrified that my wife will look at me like I'm a loser and my friends will think I'm cheap. I'm viewed as a hotshot entrepreneur. I should have money to burn. Before long, I'm looking at the table and there's shrimp and salmon, two T-bones, and a second bottle of wine. Just as we're finishing up and I'm trying to signal to the waiter for the check, our wives announce, let's order a bunch of different desserts and we'll split them. At this point, I excuse myself from the table. I go to the bathroom, go into the stall, and call the credit card company again, just to make sure that I really did have that $500 in my account. On my way back, I stop the waiter, give him my card, and $460 later, including tip, I paid for the entire dinner. Why did I do that? Remember, I didn't want to look like a loser. I was the fancy entrepreneur. I couldn't let my friends or wife know I was really broke. I was a schmuck. I go back to the table to everyone full and happy. The waiter comes back and says, Mr. Monero picked up the tab. My wife gives me a kiss on the cheek. My buddy says, I'll get you next time. Next time? I gotta do this again? Instead of $500 on a credit card, I leave with $40 left to my name on credit. According to my definition, that is flat ass broke. And we can all agree that it's stupid. That's when I woke up and decided something had to change. Many people play the charade like I did. Some do it while they're young like I was, but some do it forever. It has happened for decades, especially before the recession of 2008. It was easy to mask what we didn't have and bullshit our way around. In 2008, we all had a wake-up call. Now it's the real deal. Whereas a nice car with a dumpy apartment or a fake Rolex used to fool some people, after the recession, so many people were forced to live on the truth. The economic downturn negatively affected tens of millions of people, with real financial pain in most cases. But it came with a silver lining. It made people reconnect to what matters most: personal happiness, friends, family, loved ones, and the truth. It convinced people to give up on the fakeness and focus on the truth. Although in the past few years, history is starting to repeat itself. The good times are back, y'all, and so are the phonies. A few weeks later, my wife said to me, hey, the Warners want to go out with us. And I said, we're not going to Bob's Chop House. We're in accumulation mode. She said, what's that? I said, we're in stack and rack mode, honey. I call it accumulation mode. What are we accumulating for? She asked. I said, for our freedom. Lucky for me, my wife liked the sound of it and got on board. She was in. What are we going to tell the Warners? She asked. I told her I'd take care of that. I called up my buddy and said, we're excited to go out to dinner with you, but I'm not dropping $400 on Bob's anymore. We're going out for tacos. I'm no longer in spend mode, my friend. I'm in accumulation mode. I began to feel the power when I said it. I'm in accumulation mode. Accumulation means I'm in stacking and racking cash mode, and that gave me confidence and power. I promise you, when you start telling people I'm in accumulation mode, the same power and confidence will flow to you. I'll never forget the night I said we were going for tacos. You don't have to spend a lot to have a great time, and we did both. The best part was at the end of the night when my buddy took me aside and said, thanks for saying that we're not going to Bob's. You know why? I couldn't afford it either. You don't need to drop $460 to have a good time with good friends. And if you do, those may not be the friends you want to be hanging with anyway. For me, when I started saying I'm in accumulation mode, the slipping back into broke, the dishonesty with my friends and everyone around me was over. It allowed me to kick that dark side once and for all. I was moving towards the light, and that light was financial freedom. But how? By telling everyone. Tell everyone I'm in accumulation mode. You'll instantly see the power that those words bring, just like I did with my friend. But you have to have the guts to put yourself in that position. This also goes back to not being afraid to talk about money. When you break down those barriers and start being honest, you'll see things start to change. Start saying it to yourself. Next time you're wondering what to do for dinner, say, I'm in accumulation mode, and have a simple meal at home. Anytime you find yourself about to blow cash on something that you don't absolutely need, stop yourself and say, I'm in accumulation mode. It'll start to flow right off your tongue. Some people are not going to continue to hang out with you, but the